Hey everyone, today I spoke with Coach Brian Agler. Coach Agler won a national championship as a player at Wittenberg University, and that's where it all began. He then spent 15 years coaching college hoops. His first 2 years as a head coach in the American Basketball League, he won back-to-back championships with the Columbus Quest. That's the equivalent to winning two WNBA championships, which he actually also has done. In 2010, he led the Seattle Storm with Lauren Jackson, Sue Bird, and Swin Cash to a WNBA championship. And he did it again in 2016 with the LA Sparks, Candace Parker, and Nneka Ogumike. He is the winningest coach in U.S. women's professional basketball, the only coach to win a WNBA championship with two different franchises. He's in the Ohio Basketball Hall of Fame, and he is currently on a quest to build yet another championship team out of the Dallas Wings. This episode is filled with tons of insight. I am so excited to share it with everyone listening. Let's roll it back and see how it went. Okay, Coach, so tell me, what are the different challenges that arise from coaching at the professional level versus coaching in college?
Well, I understand. I coached at the college level, and I've had kids that have been recruited, and my son's been a coach at that level. So I understand the amount of time that college coaches have to put into the recruiting process. And it's more than just player evaluation. It's you're really trying to recruit through communication to a variety of people for one student athlete. And it takes a lot of time, a lot of focus, a lot of energy over, you know, years in terms of time span. So from the main difference to me is that within the professional ranks, we, not that we don't do work on recruiting, it's more of an evaluation for us. And you have to evaluate in regards to where you're going to pick in the draft, what you're looking for, you know, some of the things, the intangible things that you look for in a player, they're going to fit your system. You do a little bit of recruiting through free agency. You know, that's somewhat similar to college recruiting. Although many times in free agency, it occurs in February and March. A lot of players that we have in the WNBA are playing overseas. So your recruitment might go through the agent, through phone calls, maybe a trip to see them overseas or not. But it's a little bit different than the college recruiting. But you know, basketball is basketball. Once you start the X and O thing, you know, it's important that you are on top of things. It's important that you gain the trust of your players, in college terms, your student athletes, and, you know, treat them professionally and find a good balance to have a good relationship with them, but at the same time challenge them as individuals and as a team to excel. So I know there's a lot of other things that go into college coaching. You know, you got to pay attention to their academics and you're dealing with a little bit of a younger person. Another difference to me, going back to the basketball side, is in college, there's a smaller range. I mean, everybody pretty much is between the years of 18 years old to 22 years old, where once you get to professional ranks, it could go anywhere between 20 years old to up in their late 30s. And there's such a wide difference of experience and skill level that happens in our league. I think it's shocking to younger players when they come into our league, how good some of these people are, how tough it is, how physical it is, how quick it is, how skilled these people are. Unfortunately, if I was going to say one thing that could improve potential WNBA players, is when you're a college player, watch a lot of WNBA games, go to some WNBA games. So you sort of see how good some of these people are. So it's not a shock. We've drafted players before, not necessarily in recent years, but when I was in Seattle, I remember drafting a player before that's never watched a WNBA game. She had no idea, you know, what it was like, how good these people were. So, you know, players should do their due diligence as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So when you first got into the league, you became the head coach and the GM of the expansion Minnesota Lynx team. And that was in 1999. So I'm curious to know, what were the expectations that you had for the WNBA as a league and then for yourself in that first year?
Well, so I was coming off coaching 2 years, a little over 2 years in the ABL. I don't know if you're familiar with the ABL or not, but in fact, you know, it's interesting that you, that where you're located, the ABL was a competitor to the WNBA.
Okay.
So you should research this a little bit. Maybe our next call, we'll talk about the ABL. But so in 1996, the Olympic Games were held in Atlanta. And a year and a half before that, the Olympic team was chosen, coached by Tara Vanderveer, and they sort of barnstormed the country and barnstormed the world to play competition in preparation for the 96 Olympics. They had 12 players on that team. And nine of those 12 players came to the ABL, didn't go to the WNBA. In fact, the ABL was a much better league in 97, 98 than the WNBA was. Not to take anything away from the WNBA, but the better players played, the majority of the better players, I should say, was that the WNBA had a couple. The majority of the better players played in the ABL because the ABL paid higher salaries, much higher salaries. We had players in the ABL back in that day that were making more money than the max contract in the WNBA today.
Wow.
So you can see why players played in the ABL. And the ABL was during the traditional basketball season, during the fall, winter, early spring. Okay. So, and neither league, the WNBA or the ABL, would let players play in both leagues, which they could have. Looking back on it, that would have been perfect scenario.
Yeah.
Players playing in both leagues. But unfortunately, basically because of the business plan, basically because we were paying higher salaries, the ABL only existed for 2 years and a little bit more. The front office was held in Palo Alto, California, okay? And I coached the Columbus Quest. And the Columbus Quest won the championship in 97 versus Don Staley's team, the Richmond Rage, okay? And then we also won the championship in 98 versus the Long Beach Stingrays, Long Beach, wow. California. And they had Yolanda Griffith. They had Venus Lacey. They had Clarissa Davis Reitzel. They had a really good team. So I was coming from that environment into the WNBA. Sort of I was going to the competitor. A few weeks after I left, so I started my contract in Minnesota the winter of 1998, December 1st. And by December 17th, the ABL folded. And one reason I took the position is because I sort of had a feeling it was going to happen. There was too much going on behind the scenes to think that we could stay afloat for that long. So if you can imagine coming off two championship teams, and I'll let you know who was on our team. So the Columbus Quest had Katie Smith, Shannon Johnson, Tanya Edwards. My first year, we had Nikki McRae with this group. We had Andrea Lloyd. We had Valerie Still. That was sort of our core of our team. So we really had a good, talented team. And there were other really good, talented teams in that league as well. Jennifer Azey and Teresa Edwards were two players off that 1996 Olympic team, were sort of the founding players of the ABL. They really worked hard to promote the league. But again, nine of the 12 Olympians from the 96 team played in the ABL initially. So you can imagine how good that league was.
Yeah.
So going into Minnesota, they were an expansion team, and sort of my anticipation was, I know we're an expansion team, but I think we can get up and get very competitive in a hurry. And so we went in to the first Minnesota season, and I think we started out, we didn't, Katie Smith was hurt. We started out off pretty well. We think we were 10-4 right off the bat. Houston was very good. Houston Comets were really good. Mm-hmm. They won the first four championships, as you know, but they were really good. And probably their best two seasons were the 98 season and the, excuse me, the 99 season and the 2000 season. But we started off 10-4, and then Andrea Lloyd was on our team and she got hurt. And she was, I don't know if you know much about her, but she played at Texas and played professionally in Europe for multiple years, probably 10 plus years, even before the ABL started. So she was a seasoned vet. She got hurt, and then we finished off, I think we finished a game under 500 at the end. So you can sort of see how significant she was to our team. Hmm. And then the ownership wanted me to put a young team together. And then of course, with young teams, you're going to have a hard time winning games. And I think I was let go as the head coach there. The first season was 99, probably 2002, 2003.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then you went to Phoenix Mercury for a little bit, San Antonio Silver Stars, and then you got the head coaching job in Seattle. So when you got to Seattle, what was your approach to coaching players like Lauren Jackson and Sue Bird? And I think Swin Cash was on that team as well, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep. So can I tell you how all that evolved from Phoenix to San Antonio to Seattle?
Please do.
Okay. So after I was let go at Minnesota, Seth Salka, the GM at Phoenix, hired me to be an assistant coach there. And so my 1 year in Phoenix was the year that Diana Taurasi was drafted. So Diana Taurasi was on that. She was a rookie, and she was on that team her rookie year. And we had a pretty good team. We just missed the playoffs. And so I knew, you could tell being around her, that she was going to be a special player. I mean, she was one of the leading scorers in the league and really talented. And so, you know, I got to know her pretty well, and it was a good experience. And I went to San Antonio. I was there for 3 years, and I was working with Dan Hughes, and the other assistant coach was Sandy Brondello, who's coaching Phoenix. We were all together.
Cool.
And I got to know Sandy real well. We're good friends. But so the first 2 years, we were below 500. The third year, we had the second pick in the draft, and we traded the number two pick in the draft for Becky Hammon. So Becky Hammon came onto our team. We signed Ruth Riley as a free agent. We signed Aaron Buescher as a free agent from Sacramento. We also got Vicky Johnson as a free agent, and we ended up having a really good team. But I guess I'm telling you this because I guess a lot of coaches listen to this podcast. Am I correct?
Yes.
Okay. So this sort of goes to show you how things can happen in your career. Okay. I'm going to tell you the story. So for 8 games into the season, I get a call. I'm on my way to practice. I get a call from Dan, and he says, "Brian, I'm not coming to practice today. I got to go to the doctor. Why don't you take practice?" I said, "No problem." So went in and practiced. He came in right at the end. We met afterwards, and he looked at me and he said, "I'm going to have Achilles surgery this week. You're going to be the head coach."
Oh gosh.
So I went from, you know, walking in that day to, as an assistant, walking out being the acting head coach. Now he was going to be out for a period of time. Long story short, we end up getting to the Western Conference Championship and get beat. Phoenix beats us. And from that was in 2007. So from that experience, and Karen Bryant, who was the general manager for the Seattle Storm, was also the general manager for the Seattle Reign of the ABL. So I knew her from the ABL days. Okay. She hired me. And so I got the head coaching job in Seattle because of how things played out in San Antonio that one season, because of my connections with Karen Bryant. So to answer, now to fast forward to the question you asked me, what do I think? Well, so it's easy. You know, when you have two of the greatest players ever, you know, you got a tremendous starting point. Doesn't guarantee you're going to win championships, but you got a starting point. And those two, I knew going in, but I really learned about them coaching them is how competitive and how much they are champions, you know, but they're finesse players. They're skilled. Mm-hmm. So I also knew, okay, we have to balance those people out. So I focused on trying to get some people that would do the dirty work that you didn't have to run a lot of things for that could be really productive. So the first year, okay, you listen to this now. You're going to giggle on this one. This roster, the first year, didn't play in the championship, but this was our roster the first year. Sue Bird, Swin Cash, Cheryl Swoops, Yolanda Griffith, and Lauren Jackson.
God.
Now, a couple of those players were on the backside of their careers. You know, Cheryl was getting older and those things, but really talented. And we kept getting banged up. We kept, you know, getting hurt. We made the playoffs, but got knocked out early. Second year, Swin had a back issue. She was out some of the time. Lauren Jackson was out. So we just couldn't get healthy. Tanisha Wright was moved into the starting lineup. We also traded for Camille Little in 2008. So we were sort of compiling this group. We're getting them together. In 2010, everything fell into place. Okay. So when I say that is our team was healthy. I'm going to make this statement and you're going to laugh. I coached in Seattle for 7 seasons. Lauren Jackson only played in 30% of the games.
My gosh.
So you can imagine in 2010, she played the whole season. And of course we won the championship that year. We sort of dominated, honestly. We ended up being 28-6, and 3 of those losses we took because we didn't play people at the end of the season just to rest them for the playoffs. And we've swept through the playoffs undefeated. I think we might be the only team that's ever done that. So basically, looking at Sue and Lauren, you had to build your team around those two, and you had to get people that would complement them. So instead of, you know, the Cheryl Swoops and the Ilana Griffiths and people like that, that wasn't necessarily the great compliment. What was the compliment was Swin Cash and Tanisha Wright and Camille Little. That was our starting five with Sue and Lauren. And the other thing that we had, and I look back on the championships teams I had in the WNBA, is we had 3 or 4 international players. And why I'm saying that is that the intangible that international players bring to a team is that they are real professional people. They're really team oriented. They understand that they need to play a role on the team, and they don't complain about playing time or being the scorer or being, you know, whatever. They don't have complaints. They just focus on the team. They play a great role. And sometimes the role is be a great complement. You know, they're always ready to play. They always do their extra work. For example, in the pros, if you go and play a game, let's say that Dallas goes to LA and plays, and we've got a couple players that don't play at all or only play a few minutes. Well, they're supposed to go and get their cardio in after the game. Okay. Mm-hmm. And the international players, when they're in that position, you never had to ask them to do those things. That was just part of what they knew they had to do. So as a coach, you're a coach, you know, when you have people that take the initiative to do the extra work, that are proactive on that, how beneficial that is to a roster and to a team. Mm-hmm. And so though, that's why it's always that ingredient of having international players is very, to me, very important. So I guess that answers your question. Just my thoughts going in was, okay, let's find players that are going to complement Sue and Lauren. And in the long run, that's what we did.
And it worked.
And it worked.
So you spoke a little bit about how your international players, you know, they don't typically complain to you about playing time, things like that. So that leads me to ask, is that something that you deal with at the professional level? Coaches coming to you and asking why they aren't playing and things like that?
Not coaches, players do, agents do, you know. You'd be shocked at the same issues that you have as a college coach, you have as a professional coach, only coming from not so much the parents or their college coach or their high school coach or whatever, but it comes from the agents, comes from the players. It's the same. You're going to have those same issues.
Okay. All right. So after Seattle, you end up coming to LA, what I was really happy about. Candace Parker is one of my favorite players. I think she's just amazing. And so LA has superstars like Candace Parker. She was the WNBA MVP and Rookie of the Year in the same year. So what was the game plan? Because they hadn't quite won a championship yet, even though they had that capability.
Yeah. It's sort of interesting you bring up Candace, because I don't know if you saw the firestorm a couple of days ago on Twitter about her.
Yeah, I did.
Even the player of the year, but yet not being selected. And I put a tweet out there that got quite a bit of attention in support of Candace, mm-hmm. Because she did have a great year. So they had the ingredients, sort of like Seattle had the ingredients. You know, you have to have great skill players. You have to have great players to win championships. And then you have to find – you have to find people that are going to complement them. So to me, LA had almost everything that they needed. Okay. And so if you remember my first year, Candace sat out the first half of the year. I don't know this. She's never told me this. I heard this, even though I'm good friends with her. She never told me this. She didn't really want me to be the head coach. She had somebody else in mind, but she's also had some injuries that were nagging. So she sat out the first half of the year. Mm-hmm. And so with that, along with NECA being injured and Elena Beard being injured and some other people, we struggled right off the bat. I think we were 3-14 at one time. We were playing pretty well for who we had, but we just couldn't win games. And then at the All-Star break, Candace came back. And so we started obviously playing better. NECA got healthier. Elena Beard got healthier. We just started playing better. And we ended up, had a losing record, but we started, like I said, All-Star break, we were 3-14. I think we ended up 14 and 20 for the season. So we made it into the playoffs. We played Minnesota the first round of the playoffs, and Minnesota ended up being the champions. But we played them to three games, and we lost right at the. I mean, we almost won the series. We lost within the last minute of the final game at their place, so we knew we were close. And so the next year, I think the players realized how much we improved through that year and how close we got. And we just came in with a lot of momentum and positive energy. We signed three international players. We had four international players on our team, three new ones. One key ingredient to the team that really helped us, it sort of went on unnoticed, but maybe really made an influence, is that we signed Raquana Williams to the roster. 2 weeks after we signed her, she tore her Achilles playing in Europe. Okay. So then the contract was void and we've turned it around and we signed Essence Carson. The reason I'm saying that is because Essence brought a sense of toughness to that team that it was lacking. You know, she basically came in and within the first couple of weeks, I remember her talking in front of the team saying, you know, we got enough to do. Even though she'd never played on a championship team before, she'd played against LA a lot in her career. And she said, she got up in front of the team and she said, you know, we've got enough weapons here to win a championship, but the reputation LA has is you're soft. You're soft. When the going gets tough, you fold your tent. And from a player to say that to a team, a teammate, and they respected her. They took that to heart. And so I feel like that was one of the things that happened to get that team over the hump, was that we added that one special piece. We had some complimentary players that didn't complain. We really gelled as a team. And then, you know, we won the series in 2006, the really good series in 2016 against Minnesota. And even then, you know, NECA had to hit that last shot to get us over the hump. Now, the other thing, another key ingredient to that team, okay, we talked about Essence, that didn't really play out until in the playoffs, but you could sort of start seeing her blossom. And I'm going to tell you another story about this person too, which is important, is we traded for Chelsea Gray. We traded our first pick in the draft, which I think was number five maybe, for Chelsea Gray to Connecticut. So Chelsea came on our team, and you know, her career up until that point was just riddled with injury, college and pro. But Chelsea really blossomed and in the playoffs was a great player for us. And you could sort of start seeing how she has gone from there. But I remember one game late in the year. This tells you what kind of quality person Chelsea is. One game late in the year, she didn't get in the game. And we won, but she didn't play a second. And I remember texting her afterwards that it was one of those games you didn't want it to happen. It just happened. You know, it just, you had a group playing well, you just let them play. So I text her after the game. I said, Chelsea, you don't read in anything. I'm not down on you. It was just one of those situations. You didn't get in. Be ready for the next one. You're going to be right back in there. And her reply was, no problem. I'm just glad that we won and I'll be ready.
Love it.
So yeah, that was it. And so that tells you how that mentality and attitude is very important to have great things happen for you as a team.
Yay! Okay, so now you're the head coach for the Dallas Wings. And from what I've read, and I probably didn't need to read this to put this together, but the goal is to build yet another championship team. So is this approach different than maybe how it was for Seattle or LA?
Very different. Very different. So it's definitely a new challenge. Okay. And it's even changed since I took the job. When I took the job, I thought we were going to have Skylar Diggins and Liz Cambage, but those players have been traded. So now we are the youngest team in the league. You know, after year one, we've traded Skylar, got the draft picks. And so our average age is around 23 years old, 24 years old. And so very, very young. And with youth comes a lack of basketball maturity, okay? Not necessarily lack of talent. These players have good, really good talent at their age. They're going to keep getting better, but they're, you know, in basketball world, they're really young. And so we have to start. It's a different starting point than it was in Seattle, different starting point than it was in LA. Now, that being said, I think we've made really good strides in who we've drafted. We need to, we need to really do a great job in free agency. We need to really tinker with the roster still. We need to keep adding. The goal hasn't changed. But, you know, we're talking about these championship teams, but they were, to get to that point to win a championship, you have to make tough decisions on roster situations. You have to make tough decisions on playing time situations. You're not going to keep everybody happy. You're going to, you know, some people aren't going to be excited about the role that they play. Some people aren't going to be excited about how you challenge them to get better. And so there's a lot that goes into winning a championship, a lot that goes into it. And you have to be lucky to do it. You have to have luck your way, and you have to be good at what you do. And you have to have great players. And so not everybody has the stomach for that. So we'll see how it plays out in Dallas. Okay. But I do like the direction that we're at right now, where we're going right now. Last year, we might've been the worst offensive team in the league. Okay. And this year now, even as young as we are, we ended up in the middle of the pack offensively, but the last 12 games, over half of the last, so 12 of the 22 games, the last 12, we led the team, we led the league in scoring. So as we went through the season and we started adjusting our playing time with people, some due to, we had to because of injury. We had several injuries this year. You know, Satu, she missed a quarter of the season with injury. Mariah Jefferson missed the majority of it. Izzy Harrison missed a lot of it. But through that, it's like anything else. When you have go through adversity and you lose a player, it also gives another somebody else an opportunity. And then sometimes those opportunities are taken advantage of. So like Marina Mabry, who played for LA like a year ago, we got in a trade. She didn't play much early, but then she got this opportunity and she moved in the starting lineup and she deserves to be there and probably deserves to stay there now moving forward. So the last 12 games of the season, we averaged just under 90 points a game. We obviously got to get a lot better defensively. Arike Ogunbowale led the league in scoring. She's our second year player, and I got a feeling she'll be an all league player this year. It probably will be announced next week. So we've got a lot of positive momentum going into next year, but we got to keep building on it. And again, we were going to have to make some tough decisions. Toughness is a big part of winning championships, mental and physical toughness throughout the organization. It's a big part of it. It's just like for you guys to really excel to me, having a great year is you get close to your potential at that moment. Doesn't have to be winning a championship. Doesn't have to be the ultimate goal for everybody. Not everybody's going to do that. Mm-hmm. But getting close to your potential is important. That's sort of the goal, is what you want to do. And so that will continue to be the goal. Eventually we want to put ourselves in position to win a championship.
Okay. So I'm curious to know, you were a really good college player. You won a national championship. And a lot of times what happens, for some reason, really great players don't end up being great coaches. But I mean, you've proven yourself as a coach. You are the winningest coach in women's professional basketball. You've won two championships with the ABL and two with the WNBA. So I want to know, how did your experience as a player help you become this great coach that you are today?
Well, I was coached by really great coaches. So, and look, that doesn't mean every day was enjoyable. you know, that great coaches aren't ones that just pat you on the back. No, great coaches are ones that find a way to bring the best out of you. And, you know, you have to receive that coaching in a certain way as well. You know, it's got to be, you've got to receive the information that you're getting. So I was lucky that way. I was coached by some really good coaches at Wittenberg University. Wittenberg is the winningest Division III program in the country. And it still has that, it still has that great tradition for almost 60 years now. It's got great tradition. And so I played there for a great coach. And to me, that's probably influenced me the most in regards to the foundation of my coaching. Now, that being said, as a coach, to be successful, and if you decide you want to do this for a career, that means longevity. And so you always have to be open to getting better. And you have to take feedback. You have to look around to see what other people are doing. You have to see what teams do against you that works. You have to critique yourself on a daily basis. So that is in play as well all the time. So how can you adapt? Can you adapt to things that are going on now compared to what they were doing 10 years ago or 15 years ago or 20 years ago? Rules change, whether it be college or pro. How you recruit, I'm sure, changes, you know, your rules. Mm-hmm. So just your ability to adapt is really important. At the same time, find a way to challenge your team to get the best out of them. But also, very important, find the right people that are going to fit with you as well. And, you know, all coaches go through tough times. You know, you're not going to get along with every player that you coach. It's just impossible. You try to make it work. Doesn't always work. So it's important as you go out and recruit or you draft or you, you know, develop your roster, find those right people that will complement your roster, will also be somebody that fits into your philosophy and your coaching style. Now, sometimes you have to adapt the other way. Sometimes you get a chance to get a great player, and now you have to make the adjustments. You have to tweak some things to make it work for that individual. See? So not that you just bend over and, you know, just completely change how you do things, but you have to keep adapting and to make things work.
Okay. So you started winning championships at the professional level in 1997, and you haven't really skipped a beat. So I want to know, you specifically, how does a coach like yourself, who has pretty much always been a winner, continue to develop and grow?
Well, I sort of think just answered that. I've had the ability, and it's not easy. Look, I've been fired a couple times too. So I've had my share of success, but I've also been fired. And I think how I've handled the being fired has helped me have the success that I've had, because as tough as that is for you as an individual, if you want to come out of that and have another opportunity and to do well when you get that opportunity, you have to have the ability to look in the mirror and say, okay, I got to get better at this area, and this area. So to me, just your ability to change, just your ability to adapt, just your ability to adjust is very important. And to go with the times, to go with the flow, to have the ability to take a roster, tinker with it, add to it, take away from it, to get it to fit the way that you want to. So that's going to be an ongoing process with every coach through their career. And that's going to be an ongoing process with teams as they go through longevity. And it's going to be, for me, it's going to be a process that we have to go through in Dallas, you know, as we build this organization into a championship contender.
So I'm curious to know, how do you coach someone like Sue Bird or any of the superstars that you've coached versus maybe your 10th man? What are the differences? I mean, you can't coach Subur necessarily how to see the right pass. She knows how to do that, right? So how do you adjust your coaching?
So you don't really coach Subur. Okay. You sort of work with Subur. You don't coach Subur. Now, I mean, I guess you're coaching her, but it's different. You've got to get along with your best players, and she's easy to get along with. That's what makes it nice. She and I had a great relationship and still do. And so you stay in good communication with them. You talk with them. You listen to them. You get their feedback. If you don't agree with your feedback, then you explain why you don't agree. But you just need to have that dialogue. So that's really important. And not to be disrespectful, but you want to treat everybody professionally and respectfully, but you can't have that kind of dialogue with every player on your team. Does that make any sense? You just don't have the time for that.
Right.
So hopefully you have great interior leadership where your best leaders of your team can help some of that. That's really important. You have your assistant coaches that can help some of that, which is really important. But as a head coach, you can't have that kind of relationship with every player on your team. It's impossible. But with Sue, it was easy. And Sue's a winner. You know, here's an interesting aspect about Sue. Okay, so I've coached 4 championships and with 3 completely different rosters. So I think I've had the ability to adapt. But if Sue Bird wins a championship this year, this will be her 4th WNBA championship with her 4th different coach doing it.
Yeah.
Well, so that says a lot about Sue. Mm-hmm. And that's the most impressive thing about her is her ability to, she understands the game. She brings the best out of her teammates. She doesn't worry about trivial stuff. You know, the only trivial stuff she worries about is stuff that affects her personally, like this. Let me give you an example. So one day we were in practice in Seattle and we're running half court offense. She's the point guard. I stand at half court. We're talking, you know, we're just running our sets and she comes back out to me. I think she might've subbed out for a second. She's standing next to me. She goes, Brian, I just don't feel right today. I'm like, I think I'm a pound too heavy. And I looked at her like, a pound too heavy. I didn't say anything. I looked at her like a pound too heavy. And that was her normal thinking, but that told me that she is in tune with her body that much, that she knows that much. She knows how she feels. Wow. And I'm sure she's not the only one. Okay. Mm-hmm. But that's the story I have in regard to something like that. And that's what the great, great ones do. They don't worry about how long practice is or, you know, they care about their teammates, but they don't care if this person over here is not getting along with this person. They don't care about that. All they care about is winning. That's all they care about. Yeah. Who's going to be on our roster? We need this. We got to be ready for this and next opponent. They're going to study their opponents. They're going to watch a lot of film. They're going to see the key players on their team. Make sure that Sue's really good at keeping people involved. And that's what they do. The trivial stuff is trivial. It's trivial. It doesn't mean anything. And they have the ability to sort that out. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does.
They're not worrying if Swin Cash didn't come in and lift weights that morning. They could care less. Now they care if Swin needs a touch. Okay, Sue's going to get it to her. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, I love that. I think it's so true.
Yeah, they just want to win. That's what they're doing it for. Why is Sue playing at 40? Why is she playing at 40? She's playing because she loves to play and she wants to win. Mm-hmm. Sue, I've had the same conversation. She's been in the same attitude if she scored 28 points in a game or she scored 2. It doesn't matter to her. Nothing matters to her other than she wants to play well and she wants to win.
Mm-hmm. That's great. All right. Well, this whole episode for anyone listening has just been filled with knowledge and nuggets and advice. But my last question is going to be, if there's anything else you can give us, do you have any more advice? I'm sure you do, for aspiring coaches.
Yeah, just to me, gain experience. Go meet people, watch practices, call colleges up to go watch practice, call pro teams up to go watch practice, call another high school and go watch practice. You can learn. There's a lot of good coaches out there at all different levels. A lot of really good coaches, and just gain knowledge. Watch the NBA. The NBA is always the sort of the front runner on the way the game is going to be played. So watch the high level play of basketball. I've gained a lot of knowledge watching a lot of international play, like watching some of the pro teams, whether it be men or women in Europe, because they look at the game a little bit differently, but a lot of times it ends up coming into the NBA. So that would be one. Develop good relationships, you know, with the people that you work with, you know, staff, organization. Very important. Find a good balance of challenging the players you have that you're coaching. You know, at the same time, keeping the aspect of, you know, we're doing this because we want our team to do really well. Be really understand what your limitations are. So don't, if you have a team that not going to win the championship, okay, don't tell them they're going to win the championship, or don't tell them they can win the championship. Keep your focus real tight. Focus on the day. Focus on the next practice. Focus on the next game. Don't focus so much on the end result. Focus on how you're going to get to the end, I guess is the best way to put it.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Coach, for joining my podcast. I can't tell you how much I appreciate this and how shocked I was that you said you would do it. This has been great. I'm so excited to share it with everyone. I really, really appreciate it. I'm looking forward to what you're going to do with the Dallas Wings.
Well, I appreciate the time. I've enjoyed it.